So hi everyone, I'm Larry.
Hi Larry.
And I am an ACA, I'm an adult child of alcoholics. And I want to thank Faith for your share. You gave me an idea or two that I can share during my share. And then I want to thank you, George, for asking me to speak tonight. I did say yes without hesitation. And then, of course, I've had a month or so to think about everything I was going to talk about. And like even my outline, I revised probably 5 or 6 times. I don't know if that's perfectionist mentality or not. But I finally got one that I could work with. And what I like to do, especially speaking, because it's not the most comfortable thing for me, is like I say a prayer. And so I wrote a prayer for tonight, and I want to share it with you. I wrote, God, grant me the power to be vulnerable tonight, to open my heart to my fellow travelers, to make person-to-person contact, to let them see, hear, and feel the real, authentic me. My critical parent and my false self are excused from tonight's meeting. Inner child Larry is invited to come out and play. Let our healing continue with me tonight. God, grant me the knowledge of your will for me and the power to carry that out. Amen.
Amen.
And so part of what I wanted to do, and I hope it would help me be able to tell my story, is that I've got sections from the BRB, the Big Red Book. I have the ACA workbook, and I also have the daily affirmations. I have a page from that. And then part of my story is in January, I'll have 21 years of sobriety. Wow. Not emotional sobriety. In December, I'll have 3 years of Al-Anon. Right now, I have about 18 months of ACA. So I'm going to thank you. And I'm going to talk about my progression as far as how I came to ACA, what got me to ACA. And so from the Big Red Book, and all these resonated with me, and when I started to think about what I was going to talk about, I turned it over to Higher Power, and Higher Power said, sit down and let's figure out some stuff. And so on page 96 of the Big Red Book, it says, making a beginning. And it says, beginning with step one, and a lot of what everything you said, Faith, but you mentioned the 12 steps, loving the 12 steps, that I'm a 12-stepper, and I can't wait to get through the 12 steps of ACA so that I can work on the laundry list workbook. And it does say work the 12 steps first, before you go to the laundry list. There's no right or wrong way, so if you're already on the laundry list and haven't done the steps, that's cool. But the steps really resonate with me. So here's making a beginning. Beginning with step one, the adult child begins to realize, perhaps for the first time, the destructive malady of growing up in an alcoholic or other dysfunctional home. In addition to shame, our families included perfectionism, rage, mental illness, sexual abuse, religious abuse, or illicit drug use. A lot of those pertain to me. Some parents were hypochondriacs who abused prescriptions and used an endless number of ailments to control others. By working the steps and attending meetings, we see that we are not unique and that our family is not unique as well. There are millions of people like us. In ACA, we begin to acquire the language we need to describe what happened to us in a manner that has meaning and resonance. Even adult children with years of 12-step experience in other programs gain a new awareness of family of origin issues by working the ACA steps. By working the 12 steps with a sponsor or knowledgeable counselor, the adult child realizes the denial and secrecy that were necessary to survive such an upbringing. Denial, which fosters the lack of clarity, is the glue that allows the disease of family dysfunction to thrive. Cloaked in denial, the disease is passed on to the next generation with amazing consistency, and I'm going to talk about that. I did that. I passed it on to my sons. The basic language of denial is don't talk, don't trust, don't feel. And tonight I'm going to talk, I'm going to trust, and I'm going to feel. So that's because I was raised, so my upbringing, I was raised in a military family. My father was a colonel in the Air Force, two tours in Korea, three tours in Vietnam. And I have a lot of issues. I have PTSD from my father. I got in trouble when I was 12 years old and broke into some houses. And I remember the first time I ever mentioned that. And it was in an Al-Anon meeting. And it was like, to me, like, and someone during that meeting talked about low self-esteem. And I was like, wow, I can't believe somebody said that they had low self-esteem and that they didn't like themselves. And tonight I'm like, I have very low self-esteem and I have self-hatred and I'm working through that. That's what ACA is doing for me. Starting to love myself. And I think the first time I remember we talked about peeling the onion, but you know, we peel the layers of the onion, and I always thought, well, what's on the inside of the onion? I mean, what are we getting to? And I heard it in a meeting, it's self-love. Like, so for me, I'm peeling away those the layers of the onion and getting to self-love, because I've not loved myself. You know, the things that happened to me when I was 12 years old, you know, and I have very vivid memories of my father on top of me and hitting me. And then my mother saying, I'll never forgive you. And so I have a reading on that about mistakes, what we do when we make mistakes. And basically, we're just human beings, and we're going to make mistakes. And so I'm working my way towards forgiveness. So with that in mind, I started working the AC. So here's the progression too. I went to 10 meetings, ACA meetings, and I remember asking myself, are you really going to do this? Are you really, because this is like, this looks like the real deal right here. This big book, like, how big is this? Damn thing's 1,000 pages long. And I thought, are you really going to do this? Because they're not kidding around. And so it took me 10 meetings before I finally bought the big red book. And then I got into that. And then I was talking to my sponsor from another program, and he said, get the workbook. I went, oh, okay. And so I started the workbook and I was actually setting myself up thinking that, oh, well, I'll have that same relationship, so I'll have a sponsor who has done all the steps and he'll show me how to do. And we tried to get together a few times, and, you know, emergency at work, something happened, we didn't get together two or three times, and in the meantime, I started reading the book, and it talked about an ACA, we do it with a co-sponsor. And I went, wow, that's higher power all the way, because I do believe my sponsor, who is ACA and probably other programs as well as Al-Anon, just let that unfold for me. And so I started working with a co-sponsor in July, and we're barely on step 4. And we get together once a week. And so on step 3, we just finished, and it says here, many ACA members use a third step prayer to formulate their third step and to move on to step 4. Some of us say this prayer with another person. This person can be your sponsor, counselor, spiritual advisor, or close friends. We offer this action for the purpose of learning to ask someone to participate in your new life. Sharing a prayer with another person lets us know we are making a connection to life and others in a meaningful way. Here is the third step prayer. So I actually printed out the third step prayer, and I have a couple of fellow travelers who are going to hand it out to us, and I'd really appreciate it if you would read it with me, because I want you to share in my new life. Change. Help me to remember that I can ask for help. I am not alone. Amen. Thank you guys for reading that with me. It means a whole lot to me. Okay, so here's how I got here, besides the dysfunctional upbringing. I had a lot of marital family issues, and my ex said, we need to go to family counseling, so I went, okay, and because I don't know how to say no, and I don't know how to set boundaries and all of those things. When I was being hit as a kid, if I did this, I got hit more. So I learned to put mine, I had to take it, and I didn't know how to say no. So if you said, let's go break into houses, I'd say, okay, let's go. I wouldn't know how to say no. And, you know, that's part of, that's real. So she said, we need to go to family counseling. I went, okay. And of course she knew it was all my issues. It was all me. And so when the therapist said, you know, we need to talk to your wife some too. And so I'm going to have her come in. And as soon as, like, I think the second time, she said, well, it's all his problem, I'm not going to go anymore. I kept going. And I went for 8 years, once a week for 8 years. And my therapist was an AA type person. And she knew I was resistant to the steps. I didn't even want to hear about coming to believe about something, or that you could tell me what higher power was, because I was high and mighty and I didn't want to hear anything from you guys about how God was or wasn't, right? So that was a big stumbling block for me. And so she said, well, I want you to count your drinks. And I went, F that, I'm not going to count my drinks. I'm either going to get wasted or I'm going to stop drinking. And I think she knew I was an all or nothing ACA, kind of black and white, grew up in a military family, true or false, yes or no. We didn't say, what do you want, Mom? We said, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. That's all we could say. We came running. If we didn't, then we got in trouble. So I stopped drinking. So I was a dry drunk. You know, I've been told by my oldest son, well, you're a dry drunk, Dad. And I used to kind of be defensive about it, and then I went, I'm okay with that. Because I didn't have a spiritual awakening. I just stopped drinking. To prove that I didn't need it. Right? Total BS, but that's what I was like. So then my oldest son, when he was 19, had a whole lot of, when he was 15, he was in juvenile hall, all kinds of things were going on. And I took him to a treatment center in Hayward, California, and spent $11,000. I was a corporate guy at the time, so I had, you know, money that I could afford to do that. And I remember driving him up there, it was like 5.5 hours. And when I dropped him off, I had this worst feeling in my life, because I knew what I would have felt like if my dad did that to me. I did it from love, and he let me do that. It was one of the hardest things I ever did in my life. And the hardest thing I ever did was call 911 on my youngest son, and maybe I'll share a little bit about that too. But I may be digressing. Let me look at my okay. Oh, so the courage to change. So I'm actually going to cross borders a little bit, and I'm going to read Courage to Change, and it's an Al-Anon book, Al-Anon approved literature, and it's on page 311, and it says here, and remember I told you I love the steps. Step 5 says, admit it to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. But what is the exact nature of my wrongs? Is it the embarrassing moments, the words spoken in anger, the dishonesty? For me, the exact nature of my wrongs is the unspoken, self-defeating assumptions that give rise to my thoughts and actions. These include notions that my best is not good enough, that I am not worthy of love, and that I have been hurt too deeply to ever really heal. If I dig deep enough, I usually find thoughts such as these beneath the things I feel worst about. I am learning to examine whether or not there is any truth to these assumptions. Then I can begin to build a life around a more realistic, more loving way of seeing myself. And then they always have a today's reminder. Living with alcoholism has taken a huge toll on my self-esteem. As a result, I may not recognize how many of my wrongs are built upon a faulty sense of self, my false self. That's why the fifth step is so enlightening and so cleansing.
together with my higher power and another person, and I put parentheses, an S to mean persons, because you guys are with me tonight. I can even change lifelong patterns. And then here's a quote. If no one knows as we really are, we run the risk of becoming victims of our own self-hatred. If we can be loved by somebody who sees us as we are, we can then begin to accept ourselves. Others rarely think we're as bad as we do. And that quote is from Alateen, Hope for Children of Alcoholics. And I love that that's in the Al-Anon literature. There's so many times they make references in how Al-Anon works. There's all kinds of stuff that shares in the how Al-Anon, which is the Al-Anon big book. So I go to 5 Al-Anon meetings a week. I go to 3 ACA meetings a week, and I go to 1 AA meeting. I go to an AA speaker meeting on Friday nights. I went to the speaker meeting last night. So there was a time my youngest son, who's turning 30 this year, said, Dad, you're bisexual. And I said, I'm probably trisexual at the least. And I love that there's, you know, I think in ACA we get here, I don't know if anyone raised their hand if this was the first program you ever came to, because I doubt it. I mean, to get to where the pain that I'm starting to deal with, I don't think I could do it just coming walking in the door. It took me 10 meetings to even get the big book. Mm-hmm. And I have 21 years of, you know, not drinking and not using drugs. Okay, so I love that the quote was from Hope for Children of Alcoholics, because that's kind of the precursor to ACA, if I remember correctly. So at the AA speaker meeting, they started off a lot of times by saying, how it works, chapter 5. Well, in our big red book, it's chapter 6. And I wanted to just read a little bit of it, because it really resonated with me. So it said, and I just want to read the characteristics. It says, we find that a difference in identity and purpose distinguishes adult children of alcoholics from other 12-step programs and underscores the need for our special focus. The central problem for ACAs is the mistaken belief formed in childhood, which affects every part of our lives. As children, we fought to survive the destructive effects of alcoholism and began an endless struggle to change a troubled, dysfunctional family into a loving, supporting one. I didn't know I was trying to do that, because all I did was mostly get in trouble, but it says that's what I was trying to do. We reach adulthood believing we failed, unable to see no one can stop the traumatic effects of family alcoholism. So that's that step one, you know, my life is unmanageable, like I'm trying to control and change it. As a child, I think we're so innocent that we always take it upon ourselves that we cause whatever. And even though I made the biggest mistake, you know, at 12 years old and got my family name, I almost got the family kicked off the military base. I made a mistake. Yeah. You know, it was a really bad one at the time. One that I carried for 50 years. I'm 65 this year, and for 50 years I carried that, like the scarlet letter, because I always remember my mother saying, I'll never forgive you. Right, so I wouldn't forgive myself either. Right? And I've come to these rooms, and I know you guys are forgiving me, and now I'm starting to forgive me. You know, it talks about moving out of isolation as one of our. So we move out of isolation, we start to feel our feelings, and the third thing is we repair ourselves. And I remember the first time, and you know, it's like we repair ourselves. The solution is to repair ourselves. With gentleness, humor, kindness, love, and I went, I don't want to be my parent. Right? Except that was the critical self, or the critical parent, right? The loving parent says, yeah, I do, because I'm here, I'm your best, you know, I'm with you. You know, I'm integrating all of those components of me now in a healthy, loving way. And like why I asked my critical parent and my all self to be excused from the meeting tonight, and hopefully that I can be real with you tonight. So I was a huge isolator, and what happened when I was, besides getting hit a lot, and my mom used to use a hairbrush, so my mom wasn't, my dad did a lot of hitting and a lot of abusive stuff. My mom,
did hitting with a hairbrush. And if we tried to cover our butt end or our head, then we got hit in the head. Let's see if I can remember where I was going with that. I might have to ask higher power for help. And what I may do is I want to read from the Daily Affirmation, which so this is the thing too, when my sponsor said, well, get the ACA workbook. I went, okay. And I said, what about the daily meditation? And he goes, yeah, get that too. Like, get all of it, you know. So now I have the laundry list workbook too, but I kind of put it to the side until I get through the steps. And I'm only on exercise 4 of step 4, and there's like 10 exercises. It's like crazy. And you know, like I love when they say AA is like, if you can be honest, you can do this simple program. And ACA just says, you still need to be honest, but it's not easy. We're going to kick your ass. You're going to go back and have to go to dig it all up. You know, and I wasn't, that's like I said, 10 meetings, you know, and it says come to 6 meetings, right? Well, I had to do 10 meetings, and then I said, okay, now I'm going to get the big book, and okay, what? The workbook? And what? The daily affirmation? And it's such a beautiful program. I mean, it really resonates with me. So I want to read the from the daily affirmation. This is how this works for me. I have to, you know, and I, besides being depressive, when my therapist diagnosed me as depressive and I took medications, you know, to not be so depressed, the other diagnosis was ADHD, and I don't know if you can see it or not. I think I can. So I'm jumping all over the place. And I remember it was funny too, because it's like, you know, Al-Anon has all these books. AA probably has a bunch of books too, and then we have all these books, and I went, wow, this is like ADHD person's dream, you know, because I have all these books going off at once, you know, like and my trunk is full of them, you know, and I open the trunk and grab them out of there and go to meetings, right? It just cracks me up, like this feeds me. So this one is, this is from November 9th. It says Mistakes is the title. And he it says here, most of us agonize over mistakes because we internalize the error. And of course, hearing your mom say she'll never forgive you, and you know, and I'll read this. It says, when we were kids, making a mistake meant being verbally and often physically abused. Our mistakes provoked over-the-top reaction from the adults around us who did not have the tools to understand that we were just doing what kids and people in general do, make mistakes. But instead, we heard shaming comments like, what's the matter with you? Are you stupid? Are you an idiot? Or you should have known better. Look what you did. And on top of that, many of us were spanked, slapped, or beaten as well. It seemed like the end of the world when this happened. The mistake could never be undone. Mom, I'll never forgive you. There it is. I can't undo the mistake, right? She died, and you know, I made amends with her at her graveside, and I hope she forgave me too. Part of the result was that the more it happened, the better we got at shaming ourselves. And so I've always felt like I had a scarlet letter on my chest that I carried around for me forever. We no longer needed to hear it from someone else because those messages became internalized. So I won't forgive me either. I'm not going to forgive me. We carried this self-shaming behavior into our adult lives, and many of us became merciless in the way we treated ourselves. So I had self-loathing, self-hatred. I can't believe I can say that in front of you now. When I the first time I mentioned it in Al-Anon, it freaked me out. I thought I was being judged really harshly. But I was judging me the harshest. In ACA, we learn to gradually reprogram those inner critical parent messages and understand that making mistakes is part of being human. We all do it. When we make a mistake, we talk about it, examine the nature of what we did, forgive ourselves, make amends when appropriate, and move on. We begin to think and act like true adults. On this day, I understand that when I make a mistake, I don't have to perpetuate my childhood abuse by beating myself up. I will call someone and process what happened, and then move on.
And that's pretty powerful to me, because I'll text you. I don't know if I'll call you. Once in a while I'm calling people, but texting is a convenience for me to not actually talk and let you feel what I'm feeling, you know, hear it in my voice. So texting is more convenient, but I really hear it. You know, we use the telephone, and when it says that, you know, part of what we do to heal, we go to meetings, we do this, and we use the telephone. And I thought, and then people joke, it's a 500-pound telephone, and I can't lift it up to my ear to call you. You know, but just coming out of isolation, I spent a lot of time in my room. If I didn't get a certain grade level, then I was on restriction till the next report card. Not just for like a week or two, but for the whole, which meant a lot of time in my room, a lot of isolation. And I became comfortable in that place, but I don't want to be there anymore. That's why I'm up here tonight, you know, and with the grace of my higher power and with all of you guys, and then going to the meetings. And humanity is, I'm not afraid of you guys as much as I used to be. Okay, so I want to do this because this resonated with me too, and it's from the workbook. Because I didn't know this, but there's actually a guarantee in the ACA has a guarantee. It's not one that we'll like. So here's what they say. It's getting started on step four. In approaching step four, many adult children have said, why dredge up the past? What is done is done. I am forgetting the past and moving forward. For these statements, ACA has an answer and a guarantee. Most people don't arrive at ACA's door by mistake. You are here for a reason, so keep an open mind. Our experience tells us that our past can be our greatest asset if we are willing to ask for help and to do the work to find out what happened. Even the adult children who can recount abuse or incidents of rejection without working a single step can benefit from step four. Simply recounting the past is not always enough to bring about healing and self-forgiveness. And that's where I'm working on, is my self-forgiveness, you know, and then healing with you guys tonight, and then just keep coming to the meetings and on and on and on in that regard. Without knowing the meaning of abandonment encoded within the past, the adult child is doomed to repeat it. The unexamined past becomes the future of the next generation, and I pass it on to my sons. Dependence, addiction, and hellish living are passed on to the next generation with amazing accuracy. So it's not even diluted. Like, what I got and what my father got, my mother and grandparents, just comes through loud and clear. It doesn't even lose 2%. It's like 100% with amazing accuracy. We ask you to work this step with and all of the 12 steps to find your true self and break the cycle of family dysfunction. If the steps do not bring relief or clarity to your life, we will refund your old way of life in full. This is the ACA guarantee. That just blew me away. Like, you can, you know, if this doesn't work, and for me, it's like, for me to be up here talking to you tonight tells me that it works. Higher power, and I think there's one more reading that I want to do that talks about, because there's a couple of things that they said. Let me see.
Am I doing okay on time?
You're doing fine.
Good. Because I'll start judging myself harshly.
No.
That means I have to forgive myself. Okay, so this is called the Reemergence of the United Self, and this is from the Big Red Book. And it says, in the safety of our meetings, we learn the truth about alcoholism and find the courage to risk moving out of our prison of isolation and fear. And that's my world before I came here. Lots of fear. We are united by the idea that we can break away from the pattern of insanity and violence we learned as children, and that we no longer have to tolerate the attitude of abuse it represents. We see the power that comes from acknowledging the truth demonstrated by others in the program. So, like, I'm sharing tonight, but I go to meetings and I hear your shares all the time, and it's helping me heal. So that interchange that we have. Experience strength and hope. Hearing the message of recovery and hope from someone else fans the dim spark of aliveness we keep buried inside. And I remember when I first started going to therapy, my therapist said, so deep down, you know that you're a good person. That was that dim spark. That's when I read that, the dim spark of aliveness we keep buried inside. So way down inside me, I felt I was a good person, I just didn't know how to live that way. And she said, you know, you're a good guy, but you have a lot of destructive behavior. And that was still hard for me to accept, but I liked that she saw that dim spark. That spark, you know, my parents didn't break my spirit completely. And I hope I didn't break my son's spirit. We become aware that there is a sane model of living which can replace the model of insanity we learned in childhood. We realize that we can defy the authority of alcoholism and not be destroyed by that defiance. Our meetings provide us with mutual support. We need to detach from insanity. It's funny because detach is a word they use in Al-Anon a lot. I always, and when I first came into Al-Anon, I was trying to force my youngest son to quit using meth. And he was on probation, and I went to his probation officer, and I said, you know, he's testing clean, but he's using. And so then when my oldest son said, Dad, you're messing up with Nick like the way you did with me, and you need to go to Al-Anon. My oldest son, who I took the treatment when he was 19, said, Dad, it's your turn. Mm-hmm. And he did it from love, and I it's a beautiful thing, because he knew I was messing up my other son as bad as I was doing with him. So, and I had to learn about detachment, because I was an enabler, I was codependent, which they don't use, and they call it enmeshment in Al-Anon, but we can say codependent here. Our program gives us a secure structure to hold us as we connect our energy to a system of beliefs and a way of life consistent with serenity and peace. Why we give service. Between the time we have decided to disconnect from our alcoholic beliefs, but have not yet reached the security of a spiritual awakening, lies, and this is a quote I love too, a dark night of the soul, where we perceive that there is no guiding force whatsoever. There's no higher power. There's no God. This is where I'm in, you know, I'm in that dark night of the soul. Our passage through this terrifying and often chaotic period of uncertainty and doubt is where we experience the power of our program and realize the importance of the service we give and receive. And I know a lot of times I've been in meetings and I've heard people say, you know, that they're in that dark night of the soul. Like, why am I coming to these meetings? You know, this is painful. I don't want to do this shit anymore. You know, and then it's like, because I'm going through the dark night, I'm getting to where I start to finally find my higher power. And this week, I got a text on Wednesday, and I go to Al-Anon meeting, a four-step meeting. I've been going to it for 3 years. That was the meeting that my oldest son took me to. He said, Dad, I'm going to sponsor you. I'm going to take you to Al-Anon. And he looked up the meetings, and he went, well, the first one's tomorrow night on Wednesday, and it's a four-step meeting. And I'm like, all right. So I went in there, and when they went around the room, he said, I'm here to sponsor my dad. I'm like, good luck with him. And, you know, so, but that's where I learned about detachment. That's when I first started to learn, what is detachment? You know, like, you don't care about the person anymore? Well, you love them, but you learn that they need to live their life, and you're not helping him at all. And I wasn't helping him at all. I was throwing down pillows, trying to help him from not falling and finding a bottom. I was totally an enabler, and my oldest son saw it. He said, Dad, you know. He called me on it in a really loving way. Let's see. Oh, so I got to go back to this. So on Wednesday, so I go to the four-step meeting, and then I go to the ACA meeting on Wednesday, and that's the first meeting I ever went to. And so I got to share two higher power stories to show you, for me, I'm not looking for evidence anymore, except I see it all around me. In Al-Anon, I was on the ninth step and basically going towards 10, 11, and 12, you know, and towards that spiritual awakening that they talk about in 12. And for some reason, just like tonight, I wrote that prayer. I'm not a prayer writer. I didn't, you know. And so I started writing prayers, and I met with my Al-Anon sponsor. And for some reason, I said, God, help me forge a closer bond with my sponsor. And I shared that with my sponsor. And that was on a Friday, and four days later, I went to my first ACA meeting, and my sponsor was leading the meeting.
Wow.
And I still get chills telling that story. My sponsor's here tonight too, by the way. Which I love that man with all my heart. And so this week, again, so Wednesday I go to the fourth step meeting at Al-Anon, and then I go to the ACA meeting, and they asked me, I got this text from an AA person who does H&I, hospitals and institution work at the Sanctuary House, and he said, would you be a speaker tonight? And I went, okay. I said, yes, I didn't. I just said where and when. I didn't say, what do you want me to talk about? How long do I have to talk? He just said, will you do it? And I said, yes. And I went in there, and there were seven people. And we shared, and I shared for about 15 minutes, and some of the residents shared. And I kind of resonated with one person, because he has the name of my father, and seemed like about the same age as my youngest son, and he shared that he had meth was his drug of choice, and he was facing prison if he got up again. And then I went, okay. And so then on Friday, last night, I went to the AA speaker meeting, and I saw him, and I went, hey, how you doing? And he said, do you sponsor? And I went, well, not really, especially I'm not an AA guy. But, I mean, I took it. I said, give me your number. So, to me, that's higher power, like connecting me with that person, connecting me with that meeting, asking me, because, like, he shared that he wanted to use, but he fought it off, you know. And then just asking me, like, he just saw me in the meeting and just said, hey, do you sponsor? And I went, higher power, like, it just made me so appreciative of knowing that my higher power is working with me, especially now that I've opened my mind and my heart and decided that God's been there all along. I just didn't let God in. You know, and people say, does God hear our prayers? And he hears them, but that he or she or the universe hears our prayers, but doesn't necessarily answer in the way we want them to be answered. But the prayers are heard. Just like if I have to be willing to do something, it doesn't mean that I've done it yet. I'm just willing. God hears our prayers. I believe that now. Especially because I'm praying now. And I've even tried to start doing meditation, which is like something I totally resisted because that was like a discipline. Like, you're telling me I have to meditate too? Does it ever end? And that's, I believe I want to close. Oh, you know what? I can't close with that. So, because I have one last thing. And thank you guys for listening. And I'm going to close with this. This is from a real small book in Al-Anon. It's called As We Understood. And it's a book of shares from people from all around the world. And this one, you know, knocks my socks off like all the rest of them have. But here's what it says. This is from a person from British Columbia, Canada. During a period of prayer and meditation, the word candle power came to my mind. We don't take much stock in candles these days because so much of what we use is powered by electricity. But what happens when a power failure plunges us into darkness? The first thing we do is grope for the nearest candle. Any old candle will do. We don't care if it's big or small, what color it is, or where it came from. We light it to dispel the darkness, to keep from banging into furniture or falling down the stairs. By the light of that one small candle, we're able to round up all the candles we have, and if we group them together, the room becomes bright as day. I like to think we can be candles. It doesn't matter if we're big or small, what color we are, or where we come from. It doesn't matter if our light is small. When we don't share it with others, we diminish ourselves spiritually. Each time we feel we're not good enough or wise enough, or we just don't care enough to try to help someone else, we put distance between ourselves and our higher power. I'm beginning to understand how ACA, AA, and Al-Anon groups are able to work so many miracles in so many lives. By combining our light, we illuminate areas of knowledge and understanding for each other. What's lacking in me can be found in another member in the group. It's this exchange, this giving and receiving of love, faith, hope, and joy, that raises our consciousness to a higher level, bringing regeneration and peace into our lives. And so what I want to ask you guys is, if you feel your candles worth burning and sharing with the group, will you stand up with me now and show me that your candle is as bright as everyone else's? And I just want to close with that, because it means a lot to me that we're sharing our hearts and our candlelight. Thank you, guys. Thank you.